Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
Okay, all right, folks, welcome back to the Palm and Pine Podcast, and we're ready to kick off another great episode for y'all, and we've got a really, really interesting guest coming in here today, and I'm going to shift right over. I got Professor Barlow here with me, as usual, and I'm going to hand it right over to him so we can jump right into this, because we're gonna learn a lot today. And we got another sports episode coming right here at you. Take it away, Professor Barlow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Steve, we just have a fantastic guest with us today. I'm just so excited. We have a world-class arm wrestler, Todd Hutchings, also known as Toddzilla. He's a six-time world champion in his weight class. He's the only American to win the East-West competition, but he's also an extraordinary engineer. He earned his bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from Michigan Tech up in the UP. He earned his master's degree in mechanical engineering from Purdue University, and he's currently an engineering manager at Pentair in addition to his world-class arm wrestling. So welcome to the podcast, Todd Hutchings.
Howdy. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So, you know, the obvious first question is how did you get into arm wrestling? You know, guys play baseball, they play basketball, they play football. And the fascinating thing about you is you started at 35 and are still competitive into your late 50s. So what drew you to the sport of arm wrestling?
I just fell into it accidentally. I was actually looking for archery tournaments at the time. And when an arm wrestling tournament popped up in the Yahoo search engine, I just went and I just happened to get into it at the right time. It started growing pretty quickly then. They came out with a movie about John Brzezink, which really exploded it. And then all of a sudden the tournaments got a lot bigger. And all of a sudden, you know, there's some money in it. So I just happened to fall into it at the right time.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Now, we learned about you from Brad Grundy. We were interviewing him, and I asked the obvious question. We didn't know a lot about this sport, so I asked, you know, what is the age range for a man when he can be competitive in this sport? The obvious question. And when he said, well, a man kind of peaks at 50, me and Steve and I both about fell out of our chairs. And, you know, so then it led to a discussion about you. Are you the first guy to kind of push the age range in this sport, or had it always been a sport where there were older guys that were competitive?
There are. 50 is about where the North Americans peak. The Eastern Europeans and those folks still peak in their late 20s, early 30s. So it's a geographic issue with the North Americans. We tend to be older when we're at our most competitive. There are some people competing older than me, but not really at the world level. The world level arm wrestlers tend to fall out around late 40s, early 50s on North America. And the Eastern Europeans, sometimes some people in their 20s or in their 30s or something will blow up to the top, and then they just all of a sudden they disappear and you can't find them anymore. So that usually happens in their 40s, you know. Of course, I mean, my sample size is real small. This is just people I know. So, you know, it's not like a definitive worldwide analysis.
Right. So I'm fascinated about your background with Michigan Tech. So we're in the LP, and about August, we're very fascinated by the UP. And me being a college guy, I'm very interested in tech schools, and I've always been interested in Michigan Tech. And I'd love to go there for a football game one fall. Tell us a little bit about your experience at Michigan Tech in the UP and what that was like.
It's a smaller school compared to our other, you know, Michigan State or University of Michigan. It's quite a bit smaller, but it's more engineering focused. I think I had a graduating class of 300, and I think the liberal arts part of our college was like under 100. Their specialty is material science. They have a really good material science program up there. When I attended, it might have changed since then, because I graduated like at 89. But when I was there, material science was their forte. Mechanical engineering tend to focus on, you know, Midwestern manufacturing. So it's a good place to go to learn thermodynamics, machine, engine development, manufacturing, that sort of thing. I think when I was there, I think the male-female ratio was like 4 to 1, you know, and that's only because we had a liberal arts college. I think if we didn't have that, it might have been closer to 6 to 1.
So that was the negative part about it. Is that what I'm picking up on?
It was negative, but I tell you, as far as colleges go, you probably couldn't get one of the better deer hunting, fishing, boating, camping, you know.
Well, hey, I'm going to have to chime in right there, Todd. I'm a big archery deer hunter, you know, and this whole thing is inspirational to us, beside hunting. I'm in my late 50s, and who knows where Dr. Barlow is. I won't even mention, but we are certainly much encouraged with your success. And I guess you're saying the North Americans were late bloomers. I think Dr. Barlow and I can certainly relate with that. But let's talk a little bit about your archery hunting career. You know, a Matthews or PSE man, or what do you use?
I started with compound bows. I had the Matthews single cam wasn't out yet when I started. But after, let's see, I was probably in my second or third year. I was in Indiana at the time. I had just graduated from Purdue. And I went, I crawled, I got permission to hunt my wife's boss's property. So I hiked a mile or so in, got up in the tree stand, got all set up, and didn't have my release with me. So I had to go all the way back to the vehicle. I switched to recurve. I switched to recurve bows after that. So
yeah, that's one of that's a lesson you learn early on that release.
You learn early. And then what I learned was if I shoot a 100-pound recurve, I can build my own arrows out of the dowels I buy at Home Depot and Lowe's. So all of a sudden my arrows went from like $6 a piece to like $1 a piece, you know? So yeah. Archery became a lot more enjoyable that year.
Well, hey, I'll tell you something else, I'm picking up in this little story, this little intro to your archery career. And, you know, a Southern man, probably the second thing they look for in a girlfriend or especially a woman to marry is hunting opportunities. So it sounds like that was there for you.
That worked out well, especially Indiana. Indiana's got some good deer in it, but not very much public land.
Well, I married a woman from Eastern Kansas, and that worked out very well. The marriage necessarily maybe didn't work out all that great, but the hunting is superb for whitetail there and continues.
Yeah. Hey, I'm a physics instructor, you know, and so I always have these kids. They're like, I teach them how to be analysts. I teach them mathematical analysis, and they're always, well, what will I ever use this for? And I think, you know, you're a perfect example of how you use an analytical training to think strategically and objectively in a different area in your sport to develop a training strategy and a competition strategy that turned out to be very successful. So I think you're probably a very good example of how an analytical education is so useful in areas, and you never know what area it would be. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I find a lot of people make claims about, I don't need this level of math or this level of science or something like that for my job. And I always go, the entire universe runs on math and physics. You have to know these things, because if you don't and somebody else does, you are at a disadvantage in this particular universe. You
know? Right. Okay. So now you were talking about the difference between the East and the West, and Brad was telling us that that arm wrestling is a super big sport in Eastern Europe and Russia, much bigger than here. Do you see it growing in the United States, or is it declining, or what right now?
No, it's exploding right now. It started exploding in the early 2000s when they made the movie Pulling John. Tournaments started getting bigger. Then at the time, the best arm wrestling league was out of Poland. Then we ended up with a league out of California, then a league out of Chicago. So it was getting bigger then. We were getting on TV. We were getting on ESPN. Casinos were having it. Now we have this league based out of Turkey, the East First West. The money's never been better. The events have never been bigger. And it's growing so fast that I train with three different arm wrestling teams in three different towns. And my arm wrestling group up in Wellington, Ohio, started with four people a little over a year ago. And in the summertime, we'll have 24 people show up. And in the wintertime, we'll have like 9 or 10. So we've tripled the size of, and they're all like 2 and 3 years worth of experience and under. So everywhere I go, it's just getting bigger and bigger. So now's a good time to be in arm wrestling. And then, of course, you know, it's always bigger in other countries, but for it to be big in America when they got so many other options. The team I trained with on Saturday, we had a kid training with us. He started at 16. He's 17 years old now, and he's training twice a week just for arm wrestling. And you've got way more athletic opportunities in high school than you'll probably ever have the rest of your life.
Right. Yeah. You tell us a little bit about, we love a funny story on this podcast, and you're widely traveled. Tell us one of the craziest things that's ever happened to you on the road. And I'll tell you, this isn't live. And if something's a little off, we're going to cut it out. So feel free to speak freely. Tell us some of the craziest things you've seen in your travels in arm wrestling competition.
It's probably not so much the arm wrestling, because that's pretty, there's not a lot of variety there. But traveling in and of itself is just strange. Like where we train in Turkey, the breakfast bar would pass for like a lunchtime salad bar anywhere else. It's all raw vegetables. There's no pancakes. It's French fries, tomatoes, lettuce.
I'm a bacon and egg kind of guy, so it would be tough.
It's turkey, so there's no pork anywhere. it's very limited meat. They're big on cheese, they're big on olives, and they're awesome at making bread. But it's just weird to see, you know, these women will sit down, they'll eat 3 or 4 loaves of bread for breakfast. I mean, it's so common that they'll just pile their table up with bread. They just sit there and eat bread and olives for breakfast.
That is a crazy story.
Yeah.
That sounds absolutely horrible. I'm more of a carnivore myself, so I would have a tough time with that. Hey, Todd, for those of us who want to, you know, be, you know, watch this sport, learn more about it, where do we go to? Is this kind of on YouTube, or where do you see these?
They have pay-per-views, and then there's a bunch of matches. Like I was just in Turkey last weekend, so there was a pay-per-view for it. But then all those matches will filter out onto YouTube in the next week or so. If you just type East versus West into any search engine, you'll come up with their website. That'll have the link for their pay-per-views and stuff. But if you type arm wrestling into YouTube and then filter past all the Devin Lorette stuff, you'll find other people arm wrestling.
Okay, great. Well, I will certainly put some of those links down in the bottom of the podcast for anyone to check out. So what's coming up, Todd? What are you training for? What's around the corner for you? And do you kind of adjust your tactics based on your opponents that you see coming for you as far as training?
Yep. This current league's got me under contract, and they got a pretty regular schedule. So I can expect an event every 3 to 4 months. I just finished one. I'm talking to the owner right now. It's probably August or September, sometime around there. There's an event coming up in Chicago in June, which will be East versus West. So that'll be the next live one. I don't think I'll be at that one, but yeah, I adjust. I usually know 6 to 8 weeks ahead of time who my opponent is, and that gives me plenty of time to look at all their videos and figure out, you know, what they're most likely to do. And that gives me the 3 or 4 months to train, you know, specifically for them. I'm a very defensive arm wrestler, so I like to know what somebody else is going to do and try not to fight them out of that. Just let them arm wrestle the way they want and hope I'm just stronger than them. But a lot of people are like very aggressive offensive type, so they just keep honing their pet move. Well, so that's basically the two styles.
It's a little like boxing. You need a break between the matches of a few months.
Not so much from the arm wrestling. I'm ready to come arm wrestle again here in a week or so, but the travel kills you. You know, it's 15, 16 hours of travel that sticks you 8 to 10 hours of jet lag, depending on where you go. And going over there isn't so bad, but it's a lot harder. The hardest week is the first week back. That's just killer, trying to get back onto the home schedule. Sometimes a tough match will knock your arm out for a week or two, but you know, we've got the training, the rehab down quite a bit, and over the counter supplements have come a long ways since the 70s. So this
young kid, this 17-year-old kid you train with, can you whip him?
Oh yeah. I know the two or three people in America that have a chance of beating me.
Well,
we like that kind of swagger here on the Palm of Mind, you know. So we have a final question Steve's going to ask you. We ask of all of our wonderful guests.
Yeah, you know, Todd, we love to just ask this final question with everyone, and you know, you can go any direction with it. You can be philosophical, spiritual, however you want to go. But we love to just ask everyone, if you had one guiding principle, one thing that you could pass on to a younger person, say this 17-year-old arm wrestler, for example, or even if you could go back in time to your younger self, what is that principle? What is the one guiding thing that has always paid off for you in life?
I have two, and I didn't invent either one of them. The second one came from Louis Simmons, who's a powerlifting coach. He says, weak things break. So if you're strong, you don't break. The other one, I saw it quoted and attributed like 5 or 6 years ago, but I swear when I went to find who originally said it just a year ago, I couldn't find it. And that's to pursue excellence over victory. And then there is a whole rationale where if you seek excellence, you know, you get better, you view life as a journey, your setbacks don't kill you. You learn to adapt and you learn to accept things. But if all you're pursuing is victory, you just get frustrated and chaotic because your happiness is based on past events, not what the future holds. I really wish I knew who said that, because I've been saying it for years and now I can't find it. And somehow the search engines got worse because the first time I searched for it, there's only
you said it.
Yeah, well, now Google will give you like 50 pages of results now, and it used to give you like three. So,
well, right here today, Todd Zilla said it, and we're going to go with that. And I'm going to get some links from you, Todd, for your YouTube page. We'll share those as well so that folks can find you and follow you and follow your career. And again, it's inspirational, and we're just very grateful to have a moment with you today and appreciate your time.
I was happy to be here. This was interesting. I liked it.
Well, we'll have to have you again someday. Great.
Oh, I would love that.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you so much. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast. All rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.